Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking. Recognized as the best Pan-African bank for SMEs. For tailored solutions and deep sector expertise, search Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking today.
As the world moves beyond the old model of donor aid, a new development finance approach I see is starting to take shape, one that is possibly more inclusive, it's a little more coordinated and country-led. At the heart of the shift is the idea of something called country platforms, essentially nationally owned multi-stakeholder frameworks designed to mobilize and align both public and private capital for sustainable development. All very well and good, but can they really replace traditional aid? And are countries like South Africa, our country, ready to lead this charge? I'm in conversation now with Professor Richard Calland, political writer and commentator, and also visiting professor at the Wits School of Governance. Richard, a very warm welcome. You describe the world as entering something called a post-aid era. What exactly do you mean by that, and why at this particular juncture?
Yeah, thank you, Jeremy. Look, this is a very timely discussion. In a couple of weeks' time, there is a very important meeting in Seville in Spain, which is a meeting that takes place only every 10 years, which brings together the world's development agencies and with the intention of working out what's the grand plan for development aid. So this conversation is very important, very timely. And the two dimensions to this notion of a post-aid world, one is the simple and rather brutish reality of a Trump administration that is pulling back from American responsibilities around the world and cutting US aid budgets and so on. That's one aspect of it. And that's having a ripple effect through UN agencies as well as just USAID projects that are hurting people as a result of those cuts. The second is a recognition that the old development aid paradigm is kind of fatigued, it's tired. The idea that there's a bunch of kind of rich developed countries who must now pay for development in underdeveloped poor countries with a very top-down approach is really, I think now, it's beyond kind of strategic value, if I can put it in those terms. And so there's a search now for a better way of organizing finance.
Why has that strategic value in the old model been lost?
I think partly because countries in the global south have become more assertive. They've become more confident. They're also richer or less poor than they used to be. And countries like India, to cite one very obvious example, is no longer a poor country. It has extraordinary development rates. It's now close to being the size of Japan in terms of its economy. But even more obviously, low development countries like Kenya have really improved in terms of many of their metrics. They face huge challenges still, let's not kid ourselves, but they're more assertive. And I think the idea that rich countries know all the answers and will come in with money and say, this is the way to fix your economy, this is the way to transition out of carbon intensive energy and so on, that's really no longer tolerable. And so a more strategic alignment is needed.
So you have this notion called country platforms. How does that differ from the traditional donor model that you've been explaining to me?
So I you're asking exactly the right question. And it may turn out that it's a mirage, that it doesn't really shift the paradigm, doesn't make the difference that's required. If it does, however, succeed, it will be because of, I think, at least two things. Firstly, it will be truly country-owned in the sense that country X, who is the recipient of the development aid, will set the agenda rather than the other way around. Secondly, a more technical point, but a very important one, is that the investment priorities will be set by that recipient country first. They will say, for example, like Egypt has done with its country platform, we want to shift our economy through big changes in agriculture, energy, and water. Those are the big levers. And therefore, we have very big plans for those three things, but we're short of finance. Who would like to come in and help finance these things in a way that's good for us, but also good for the world? And that's the conversation that's kind of happening. And so that project planning, which in the past was kind of countries had to do it hoping they would then get money. Now they will get money for developing the project pipeline and the actual ideas from the get-go.
But in practical terms, Richard, difficult surely to align competing interests of governments, investors, and development partners. It's all down to how this is marshaled.
Well, indeed. And the South Africa's own experience with our so-called JETP, the Just Energy Transition Partnership, which was announced, if you remember, at the COP annual climate change negotiation meeting in Glasgow some 4 years ago. $8.5 billion to come to support South Africa's transition away from coal towards renewable energy. That has worked to some extent. It's also been a disappointment to some extent. Big lessons have been learned about sequencing, about the terms and conditions of the finance, and so on. But what's really important is that all the relevant stakeholders are involved in the conversation. So choreographing the governance and the decision-making around it is going to be critical to the legitimacy and the effectiveness of a country platform.
And underpinning this, Richard, you say it's critical for deep political reform to take place to make the platform work. Practically, what would that reform actually look like?
Well, I think you've got to have capability in the state because this is state-led. This is not, yes, there'll be private finance, there'll be private sector actors involved, both in the planning, the financing, and the execution of the projects. But it's got to be state-led. And so that requires, as a minimum requirement, a capability within the state, which is often absent or is distorted by corruption or rent-seeking. So cleaning up the governance, building the leadership and project capabilities in the state is going to be an important part of this. So the Green Climate Fund, for example, has ramped up its so-called Climate Finance Readiness Fund, giving $7 million a year to each of the 54 countries on the African continent in order for them to ready themselves for this kind of development assistance.
Capability is one thing, but the argument is also predicated on trust. And we know that trust is often in very short supply.
It's in huge short supply at the moment, and it's in short supply, particularly in relation to climate finance. Copenhagen, years ago, 2009, the disaster of that climate negotiation. In the ashes of Copenhagen, world leaders agreed to $100 billion a year per country, for developing countries by 2020. And that never came. And we're still searching for that mythical figure. And that has distorted trust. It's undermined confidence. And yet everybody knows that finance is essential to investing in the infrastructure needed to deal with climate overshoot, to deal with getting out of carbon as quickly as possible, and so on.
So, Richard, if I've read this correctly, South Africa is being put forward as a potential test case. But the reality of our current political and institutional setups don't really support the model unless we can make changes very quickly. What would those immediate changes need to be in order to make the model work more effectively?
Well, South Africa is already a test case. It was a pioneer in this regard. And the JETP, the Just Energy Transition, is regarded as a really important guinea pig for how to do this, but also lessons learned how not to do it. For example, the sequencing was wrong. So big investments in closing coal power stations, building up renewable energy. But the transmission grid necessary to move renewable energy around the country was not yet in place. So that's an important lesson. Get your sequencing right. Secondly, as you say, the political economy is treacherous, to put it mildly. The vested interests in coal are really difficult. So you need a political pact to underpin the more technical aspects of the development aid deal.
I'm going to leave it there with my thanks. That's Professor Richard Calland, a political writer, commentator, also visiting professor at the Wits School of Governance here in Gauteng. Richard, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate your time.
Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking.